Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this Monday, November 14th, 2016. As we discuss the world of sports and pop culture, as always, call number 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to Instagram and follow me at Rillo Gerald Quinn. Busy program, a lot of football to discuss as we had a great football weekend that started out, of course, with the college, with all the wildness in college football and all the upsets, and then of course it followed on Sunday with a number of close games, nine games decided by 7 points or less, and that's where we're going to begin in New England Foxborough as the Seattle Seahawks took down the New England Patriots 31-24 in a rematch of course Super Bowl 49. Tremendous game from start to finish. These are two heavyweight teams. One of the few games you're going to see this year where both teams are capable of winning, not only getting to the Super Bowl, but winning a Super Bowl. I mean, this is one of the very few games that you'll see. Not that many teams could win the Super Bowl and get to the Super Bowl, but this game featured two of those teams, and I give Seattle a lot of credit. Cross country against a big time offense. You know what to get, what you're going to get out of Brady, what you're going to get out of Gronkowski, but Seattle really won this game with their offense. Russell Wilson was tremendous. Seattle moved the ball up and down the field all night long against that New England defense that's kind of vulnerable. I mean, New England's defense right now, I know they hadn't been giving up a lot of points per game, but you can move the ball on that. You can move the ball on that defense. They don't have much of a pass rush. You saw Belichick is searching for a pass rusher, looking just everywhere to find somebody that can get to the quarterback. I know the guy, that he started in front of Sherrard had a couple sacks, but he's not a big time pass rusher. But anyway, this was about Seattle and them finding a running back. I know Rawls is coming back soon, but CJ Pros had a big time game. We had Doug Baldwin had a couple touchdown catches. Seattle almost got themselves in trouble, and Pete Carroll. And again, this has become an epidemic in the NFL about this two point conversion and going for two, chasing points at 31-24 instead of kicking the extra point to go up by 8. Pete Carroll chose to go for two, one to make it a two possession game from 7 points to 9. I understand the premise, but the bottom line is, you don't make that. All the Patriots had to do was go down and get a potential game tying touchdown, which they almost did. Had Seattle just kicked the extra point, then you're up 32-24, and they have to not only get a score, a touchdown, but they also have to convert a two point conversion. So, and if they don't do that, then they're going to have an onside kick. So a lot of things would have had to happen for that game to be tied or for New England to win. As Seattle just kicked the extra point and not chase points by going for that 2-point conversion at 31-24. I had no problem with the non-call on at the end of the game of Gronkowski and Cam Chancellor. Cam Chancellor guessed right. He guessed right. He guessed that they were going to go for the corner fade route, which is one of their patented plays. Had Gronkowski hit him with a double move, like cut on the inside, Chancellor would have been burned like that. It would you'd have called an easy touchdown because Chancellor completely sold out on the fade pattern. And again, he guessed. It's kind of like I compare it to you're playing defense in basketball and you draw offensive charge. A lot of that, is footwork but some of that is guessing where you think the offensive player is going to go. And that was the case with Chancellor. And Chancellor is one of the few players in the NFL who is strong enough to go mano a mano in a short distance with Gronkowski. Gronkowski normally would knock a regular defensive back or just overpower another defensive player with who doesn't have the size or athleticism. Chancellor is 6'3", 230 pounds. So, he has the size, he has enough athleticism, he has the strength to, again, in that part of the field, to stick with a Rob Gronkowski. So, great win for Seattle, again, on the road. You get the sense that Seattle, similar to the Giants, when the Giants were championship contenders and were winning Super Bowls under Tom Coughlin, are one of the few teams in the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick era that have no fear whatsoever of the Patriots. Like, they're very comfortable with playing the Patriots. They think they're better than the Patriots. They think they should have won that Super Bowl against the Patriots. So they, again, that, being on the road, it doesn't matter where the game is at, Seattle has confidence playing New England. Again, New England's fine. They still have the inside track on home field advantage. Seattle certainly has the inside track on that number two seed, still only a game behind Dallas for that number, or a game and a half behind Dallas for that number one seed, considering they had a tie as well. So they still have an outside chance to get home field. Still a lot of football left to be played. But again, great win for Seattle as they improve to 7-2-1. New England falls to 7-2 on the season. Again, New England is in total control of that division, of that AFC East division, without question. So Seattle takes out New England 31-24. That, and again, this was a hard choice. That was without question. That was, to me, the game of the weekend. We had a lot to choose from. We'll discuss it over the course of the program. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. On this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. As always, you can find us at itunes.apple.com. Look up Cyril Joe Quinn Review, and you will find archived episodes and even this episode, most recent episode of the podcast. Tonight's episode, will probably be on by at least tomorrow morning, if not tomorrow, later tomorrow afternoon on the iTunes. If you have an Apple, again, Apple at iTunes, iTunes.apple.com, and look up Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Review. That's the old name of the podcast. So you can check us out, rate us, comments, questions, anything like that. Certainly looking forward to hearing from you. Washington takes out Minnesota 26-20. Another nail biter for the Redskins. The Redskins have played in these games. Out of their nine games, at least seven of them have been decided by 7 points or less. They played a number of these close games. Only what the Cleveland and Pittsburgh games were decided by more than two possessions. As again, Pittsburgh blew them out, and of course they handle Cleveland 31-20 that game. But most of the Redskins games have been decided in this particular fashion. You thought that, the Redskins were going to run away with this game early on at 14-0. But Minnesota really got the offense going in that second quarter. Bradford had a big first half. Minnesota had well over 230 yards of offense in the first half. Don't understand why Stephon Diggs wasn't being guarded by Josh Norman. You bring a guy in here making that kind of money, and again, you're by far and away your number one cornerback, and you have your second, and you have your number two and probably number three or four cornerbacks guarding their best receivers. That made no sense to me. But regardless of that, the Redskins were still able to get the win. Again, you put 26 points, 388 yards on a Minnesota defense that is ranked number one in the entire league. You can move the ball on anybody. And again, over the course of the season, Washington has proven that they can move the ball at will on anybody. Now, finishing drives is another thing. They still, you know, can struggle in the red zone. But, you know, in this particular game, they, you know, again, 26 points on a team that's only given up about 16 points a game certainly qualifies as a great offensive performance. You like what you saw out of Robert Kelly, 22 carries for 97 yards. We'll talk more about the healthy scratch that was Matt Jones. You know, Crowder had a touchdown catch. Of course, Garcon had a nice day. He got targeted a lot. Guy had 10 targets, but did have like 8 catches for 81 yards. And Kirk Cousins, you know, Cousins played well. I think, and again, for the last 6 or 7 games, 5 or 6 games, I think Kirk Cousins has played at a relatively high level. When he's gotten time, for the most part, you know, he's been accurate. The offensive line played great. You had, you know, Nishi filling in for, of course, the suspended Trent Williams. So all around, a solid performance for the Redskins. One thing, you know, and I heard this a lot this morning and reading the Washington papers, trying to make this performance about the Washington defense. This performance was not about the Washington defense, okay? They got shredded in the first half of that game. And the only reason why Minnesota lost, you know, momentum in the third quarter is they didn't have the football. The Washington offense controlled the football completely in that third quarter. Minnesota didn't have the ball. Minnesota was able to move the ball in the Washington defense. It was, again, Washington did not win this game with their defense. They won the game with their offense. The offense, you know, everything that they did right was predicated off that they did right in that game was because of their offense. Now, again, the defense made some late plays. Preston Smith had a big fourth quarter with the interception that, again, to me was the play of the game, and he had a sack, you know, a clinching sack, along with Trent Murphy in that fourth quarter. They had a nice fourth quarter in terms of the pass rush coming up big, but for the most part, the Washington pass rush was almost up to that point, was a non-factor. Minnesota moved the ball up and down the field. Bradford threw the ball all over the place. They couldn't cover Diggs. For the most part, they couldn't cover Kyle Rudolph, so who is not a big-time tight end. He's okay. Diggs is a very good receiver, but again, I don't understand why Josh Norman was not on him for the majority of the game. Again, we've seen this before. Early in the season, they got in trouble by not putting Norman on Antonio Brown, and Brown went nuts. Diggs was similar. I mean, Diggs did whatever he wanted. So this game was not about the Washington defense. Overall, I want to say, I mean, it was not about the Washington defense. This game, Redskins won this game with their offense. Matt Jones, Deshaun Jackson, neither one didn't play. Deshaun Jackson still nursing, you know, his injuries, pick one, shoulder, whatever. I mean, he's had a multitude of injuries. Matt Jones was a healthy scratch. I don't think it's the last we'll see of Matt Jones. I think we're going to see him. I think he will get another chance. It might be his last chance, but I think he will get another chance. I'd be surprised if he did not play against Green Bay next Sunday night, as the Redskins have the Sunday night game at home. So I don't think this is the end of Matt Jones' era in DC, with the Redskins, but he certainly ran, without question, ran out of chances. The Redskins keep pace in the NFC. They still are holding down that final playoff spot at number 6, right behind the Giants, who are at number 5. So, you know, it's not too early to start looking at that. Giants, of course, play tonight hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. The Giants try to improve to 6-3. Washington, again, improving to 5-3-1. Minnesota falls to 5. You know, their free fall continues. They dropped to 5-4, their fourth straight loss. I thought Minnesota, you know, they looked like they were going to get blown out of the building. I thought for the most part they played okay. I mean, they moved the ball on the Redskins. Again, defensively, the Redskins, again, moved the ball. The Redskins can move the ball on anybody. Offensively, they can move the ball on anybody, especially Now that Vernon Davis has emerged. They have a multitude of weapons. Like, I think for my money. Now, Gronkowski, Bennett, you want to give them an edge as the best tight end combo in the league? I have no problem with that because I think Gronkowski's maybe the best tight end ever, certainly up there. But the combination of Reed and Vernon Davis is not far behind. I mean, Vernon Davis has completely resurrected his career. He's running past everybody. I mean, he really has become a guy where if Jordan Reed is not getting the ball, you can count on Vernon Davis to make some big plays, and it only takes a couple of plays. I mean, you don't need to target him a lot. He'll make two or three big plays that are game changing plays, and really to the point, this is how good Jordan Reed is, to a point where Jordan Reed is getting other people open. Now, that's the true definition of a great player. Once you get to a stage of your career where you are getting other people open because of the attention that's being put on you, that's where Jordan Reed is at right now. See Jameson Crowder, making plays. You see Vernon Davis making plays. Chris Thompson, though, he had the fumble out the backfield. So, Washington has a lot of offensive weapons to go to. Now, again, moving forward, this is the first of a gauntlet of games. Washington, next week, of course, they host Green Bay. They're catching Green Bay at the right time, just like they were catching Minnesota at the right time. And then the fun starts. Thanksgiving Day, Jerry's World, the Dallas Cowboys. And hopefully, it'll be the 9-1 Dallas Cowboys that I would love no more than to walk in on Thanksgiving Day and ruin a Thanksgiving for the Dallas Cowboys. But that, we have plenty of time for that. Right now, Redskins are now 5-3-1 on the season as they stay in playoff contention with a big win over Minnesota 26-20. Dallas, speaking of Dallas, they had what I certainly could have made a case for being the game of the day, 35-30 over Pittsburgh. Dallas gets a big win on the road against a desperate Pittsburgh team. Dallas improves, of course, 8-1 on the season. Pittsburgh falls to 4-5. They have lost three straight now, and this was a game where, basically came down to almost who had the ball last for the most part. Neither defense could do anything against the offense. Both the offenses dominated this game. Both teams went well over 400 yards passing. Roethlisberger played great, 37-46, 408, three touchdowns. Dak Prescott also had over 300 yards passing. Had a big day out, of course, Ezekiel Elliott, over 200 yards from scrimmage, three touchdowns, had two, of course, had the game-winning touchdown run when he just broke through, was from 32 yards out. And Dallas gets a great win for them on the road in a tough place. Pittsburgh plays well in that stadium, took on the onslaught of Roethlisberger and Brown and company and dominated the game in terms of the line of scrimmage. The Pittsburgh offensive line. No, I know Dallas offensive line had a lot of penalties, but Pittsburgh for the most part could not get any pressure hardly on Prescott for the most part. We know Pittsburgh is not known for his pass rushing. Again, to watch Pittsburgh, again, we know Dallas is a very good offense. Make no mistake about it, but to watch the Pittsburgh defense get shredded, this is not the steel curtain this is more like the satin curtain. Their defense is just bad this year. I mean, they can't cover anybody, and now it's gotten to a point where you can even run on them. So Pittsburgh certainly, is in a bit of trouble, though they're in a division that nobody's going to run away from. Baltimore is only 5-4, so they're still in a game back. And looking at the landscape of the AFC, they're going to have to get in through by winning the division because you have three teams in the AFC West, all with seven or more wins, with Kansas City, Denver, and, of course, the Oakland Raiders who are leading that division. So Pittsburgh in a bit of trouble, but not out of it, still has a chance to win that division. Dallas right now is the number one seed in the NFC, of course, leading the division by a couple of games and leading Seattle by a game for home field advantage. Again, Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott are leading the way. And again, the talk about Tony Romo needs to just completely go away. I mean, forget about him starting. The question should be, what team is Tony Romo going to be on in 2017? That would be the bigger question because they're going to trade him in the offseason. There's no two ways about it. Prescott is their quarterback of the present. He's the quarterback of their future. They are not. You will never see Tony Romo play another down with the Dallas Cowboys unless Prescott gets hurt. That's my prediction, that you won't see Tony Romo play another down with the Dallas Cowboys. Again, unless Prescott gets hurt. I mean, it's Prescott's team right now. Dallas is rolling, and there's no reason. Again, this to me similar, almost similar to Brady and Drew Bledsoe. You have one guy right now who is, without question, the future of the franchise. Your team is winning. He has tremendous poise. I've been impressed with him since week one, even when they lost to the Giants. I was impressed with him, and, you know, the guy's the real deal. So, again, Tony Romo days in Dallas are over. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. When we return, we're going to talk about a wild Saturday of college football, shake-up Saturday in the world of college football. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Of course, you had in college football tomorrow night, you're going to have the unveiling of the new top 25 ranked playoff rankings. But before that comes out, you've certainly had a shakeup in terms of what transpired Saturday, as you, for the first time since 1985, you had the number 2, 3, and 4 ranked teams go down with Clemson, Michigan, and Washington all falling. Two of the teams, Clemson and Washington, lost at home. Clemson have been living on the edge all season long, not completely shocked by their loss. I was shocked by Michigan to Iowa. I didn't see that coming at all. And USC right now is playing, you know, great football, right? And playing like a top 10 team, you know, They manhandled Washington. So what does this mean, big picture, as far as the college football goes? Really, not too much has changed, to be honest with you. The one big thing that came out was, you know, the loser in all of this was Ohio State. Ohio State now does not control their own destiny. Like, they can win out, beat Michigan, and still not play for the Big Ten championship. Now, that would increase their chances of possibly getting in as a one-loss team. And that's going to be as a one-loss team, even if they didn't play in the Big Ten championship. That's a possibility, but they still would need some help with that. But Penn State right now, you know, Penn State and Wisconsin were also the big winners, because there's a possibility that the winner, that Penn State and Wisconsin could meet for the Big Ten championship, and the winner of that game could get one of the four playoff spots. Right now, there's one lock for the playoff spot, and that's Alabama. Alabama, unless something catastrophic happens, will be in the playoffs. Where even if they lose an SEC championship, or if they lose to Auburn in two weeks. So Alabama is going to be in the playoffs, and that second spot is more than likely going to be occupied by either a combination of probably either Clemson or Louisville. Let's say Clemson, again, despite the loss, still controls their own destiny. They beat Louisville earlier in the season, so they would have the tiebreaker over them in facing whoever they would face, whether it be a Virginia Tech or North Carolina on the other side of the bracket in terms of the ACC championship. So Clemson still controls their destiny. We know about Alabama. Michigan still controls their own destiny. If they win out, they will knock out Ohio State and Penn State and probably play Wisconsin for the Big Ten championship. So the question is, can a two-loss Wisconsin team get into the playoffs? Can a two-loss Penn State team get into the playoffs? Will a one-loss Ohio State or a one-loss Washington get into the playoffs? I saw some of that Washington game. I was not impressed by Washington at all. They were manhandled by USC on their own home field. So that told me a lot that tells me they're probably going to lose another game. They still have to play Washington State. And even if they beat Washington State, we'll have to go through either USC or Colorado in their conference championship. So right now, I don't have too much faith in Washington. But again, a lot can still happen. Right now, you know, forget about Oklahoma. Big 12 has no respect right now in terms of their conference, so I wouldn't worry about Oklahoma getting to the playoffs. But again, at the top, you have Alabama, Ohio. You have Alabama still in the mix, of course. Clemson, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Washington, Louisville. So those still for a handful of teams that are in the mix for a playoff spot. But again, the big loser to me was Ohio State. Ohio State, as you know, they lost control of their destiny due to, again, what transpired with Michigan and Iowa. Of course, Michigan loses their quarterback probably for the season. That hasn't been confirmed yet. Spates, he broke his collarbone, so he's definitely not going to play this week, but I would say probably will be done for the season. So, again, a wild, crazy weekend in college football. We always talk about this scenario, that scenario. Things tend to work themselves out in college football. Like, these teams just lose and lose and lose, knock each other out, have a hard time dealing with the pressure of being not only being undefeated, but just, you know, of these late November, early December games. So there's still a lot to be worked out as far as the college football goes. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll go down to the Big Easy and an embarrassing performance in Tennessee. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of Sir Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Philadelphia takes out Atlanta 24-15. Philadelphia has been unbeatable at home. They've got wins over Minnesota, Atlanta, and Pittsburgh at home. So they've been tremendous at home, undefeated so far. Completely different team at home versus on the road. They ran the ball 38 times, over 200 yards. They really tried to, not so much try to take the ball out of Winston's hands, but try to take a little pressure off him as he had been struggling the last couple of games with some turnovers. So that was a physical performance by Philadelphia. Philadelphia on its best day can play with anybody. We know that. Holding Atlanta to 15 points, an explosive Atlanta offense, really held Matt Ryan in check for the most part. I know Julio Jones had 10 catches for 135 yards. But, you hope Atlanta 15 points, that's tremendous defense. So Philadelphia gets a much-needed win as they improve to 5-4 on the season. You know, there are teams that are not as good as their record, like Houston. I don't think Houston is a 6-3 team, even though I just don't have any faith in the Houston Texans. Philadelphia is better than 5-4. Like, Philadelphia is they're a much better team than 5-4. They can, on their best day, they can play and beat anybody. So they've lost a number of close games, Detroit, the Giants, to the Redskins, and of course to Dallas a couple weeks back. That team can play with anybody. I mean, they really can. They're talented on both sides of the ball. Ryan Matthews can have a big day as he, finally got off punishment. Of course, he was not a non-factor. Was an absolute non-factor last week, just on the sidelines, basically in that Giant game. But Philadelphia got a much, much needed victory at home over Atlanta. Again, not a big deal for Atlanta because their division is not very good. They're still in a position to make the playoffs at 6-4. Denver takes out New Orleans 25-23. Denver improves to 7-3 on the season. New Orleans falls to 4-5. Of course, this had one of the craziest finishes you'll ever see. You have Justin Simmons blocking a extra point that would have given New Orleans the lead at, to make it 24-23, and Will Parker returns it almost by the, you know, by probably like a half an inch, avoided stepping out of bounds on that 2-point conversion return to basically give Denver a 25-23 win. That, you know, that play, those two plays overshadow a all-world throw by Drew Brees on the touchdown to Brandon Cooks. That was as good a throw that you'll ever see. He throws it in, you know, he steps up in the pocket, throws it in between two defenders, and hits Brandon Cook right between the numbers. I mean, that was a tremendous throw by Drew Brees, who without question we know is a Hall of Fame quarterback. So that kind of those two plays, the block extra point and the return by Parker, overshadowed what had been just a tremendous throw by one Drew Brees. Again, good win for Denver. Nice bounce back win coming off a loss from Oakland last week, and where they were pushed all over the field. So Denver, who is in an absolute dogfight with Oakland and Kansas City in that division, improves to 7-3. Tough loss for the Saints because, you know, Atlanta, Carolina loses. They really had a chance to make up some ground, but they're still right in the thick of things in that division, even at 4-5. Kansas City 20-17 over Carolina. Carolina was up 17-0 at one point. Kansas City had a big fourth quarter. Two plays changed the course of this game. Eric Berry pick six for a touchdown, and the Marcus Peters strip of Kelvin Benjamin that led to the Kansas City field goal to give them a win 20-17. This is just a brutal loss for Carolina. I thought Carolina was on its way to making a nice run in the second half and really becoming a dangerous football team moving forward. This eliminates them from any type of playoff contention. I don't see Carolina making any run now at 3-6. They still, they still have some fight in them in these mid-December games. But as far as making the playoffs, that's over with in terms of Carolina. Great win for Kansas City. Kansas City is just a solid football team. They don't do one thing spectacular. They do just a bunch of stuff just great. They do just a bunch of things well. Again, that defense, they have a legit top five defense. They have good special teams, good kicker, and they are extremely well coached by one Andy Reid. Great win for Kansas City. They've had two comeback wins out over 17 points. You saw week one against San Diego, and both of them were on the road. Week one was against San Diego. Maybe that San Diego one was at home. I'm trying to think where it was at. San Diego one was at. I think it was at Kansas City, but in Kansas City. But anyway, they've had two wins this season when they were down by 17 points. They came back to win both those games. Tough loss for Carolina. You heard Greg Olsen after the game said it was one of the toughest losses that he's had in his 10 years in the league. So that was Carolina. Listen, Carolina's not dumb. They know any chance they had of making the playoffs went down the drain with that loss. So Kansas City, again, improves to now 7-2, tied, in essence, tied with Oakland for first place in that AFC West, just a half game up, of course, on the Denver Broncos. 347-215-6180 is call number. When we return, we'll talk about what's going on, what happened in Tennessee, and the Bryce Petty era begins. That's coming up, and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180 is the call number. They are underway, of course, at MetLife. Giants hosting Cincinnati. Giants currently are at around the Cincinnati 22-23 yard line, driving as they look to score on their opening possession. A battle, of course, top receivers with A.J. Green and, of course, Odell Beckham Jr. going at to go at it. A key, again, Cincinnati can win this game. They can really take some of the taste out of their mouth, bad taste out of their mouth coming off that tie against the Redskins. The Giants, of course, trying to keep positive momentum going as they look to go to 6-3 and to be an outright second place in the NFC East. Giants are about to score as they have scored touchdown pass to Adams, tight end Adams. I don't even know who that is for the Giants. Jarrell Adams just caught a 10-yard touchdown, so the Giants are going to be up 7-0. Rams take out the Jets 9-6 in a game. Considering all the close games there were, this probably was one of the worst games of the day. You saw Bryce Petty. You saw some, quarterbacking. This wasn't Marino and Montana, I'll tell you that, with Petty and Case Keenum. You saw the beginning of the Bryce Petty era in New York. How long it will last, who knows, but it certainly, if it's the beginning of the Bryce Petty era, then that signifies the end of the Ryan Fitzpatrick era, as they've decided that they want to see what they have in Petty. That the seed, they're probably not going anywhere, and they're not going to make the playoffs this year. So they want to see what they have in a young quarterback in Petty, and basically go from there. He had a touchdown pass, but that was about it. 9-6, the Jets fall to the Rams. Rams, 4-5, but they're not going anywhere either. These are two, the Rams are a pretty good defensive team, but not much else. Even Gurley isn't putting up the numbers that you would expect him to put up in his second year. The Jets are an absolute mess. They're going nowhere fast, and they're going to, their quarterback situation is, who knows what they're going to do at quarterback for 2017, but their 2016 season is over, as they fall to 3-7 on the season. Remember, if you're a Jets fan, you still have two games left with the New England Patriots. Miami takes out San Diego 31-24. Miami improves to 5-4. The Chargers fall to 4-6. And again, the San Diego Chargers find new and inventive ways to lose games. Phillip Rivers has 4 interceptions in one quarter, in the fourth quarter at that, including a game-winning pick six from Kiko Alonso, the former Eagle linebacker. Had a pick six to win the game. Miami has played well since starting out 1-4. They've won 4 straight, playing well. You have San Diego, which, typical San Diego, they could play with anybody. They find a way to blow, to lose fourth quarter leads, and they're going to do, this is what San Diego does. They're going to self-destruct in every which way possible. But still, a team that, you don't want to play if you have to win a game. I mean, they can beat you. They can beat you without question, but again, they find ways to lose games, and that was certainly the case here. Despite 3 touchdowns and over 300 yards passing, you had Phillip Rivers throw 4 fourth quarter interceptions. So some other games of note: you had Tampa Bay just stomping all over the Chicago Bears 36-10, and Arizona surviving the 49ers 23-20. Top 5 teams. I'm still going to say, despite their loss, New England's number 1, Seattle at 2, Dallas 3, Denver 4, and the Oakland Raiders at 5. So that's my current top 5 teams in the league. We mentioned this, these coaches with this 2-point conversion, it just drives you crazy. Like, I don't get Mike Tomlin's fascination with going for 2. Like, you put yourself in a position where you're chasing points when you don't have to. And again, that Seattle game could have went bad for Seattle had they lost that game. Going for 2, they go for 2 at 13. They go for 2 at 12-7 after scoring a touchdown. And they go for 2, at 31-24 when they could have been up by 8 and forced New England to kick to not only score but convert to one conversion. What's happening with the 2-point conversion is you have a lot of these kickers that are missing the extra point. So you see a lot. So the quickest way to get those points back is by going for two. So these coaches panic and go for two, start chasing points in the second quarter. I've been always of the theory, don't chase points unless you have to. You don't go for the 2-point conversion unless you have to. That means mid fourth quarter, late fourth quarter. It almost basically cost Carolina a Super Bowl against New England a few years back. These teams, Pittsburgh does it a lot. We saw yesterday Seattle almost cost them a game. That is going to be something to watch out for moving forward, these 2-point conversions. In the Pittsburgh-Dallas game, you had 6 2-point conversions that were not converted by both teams, 4 by Pittsburgh as looked like Eifert is about to catch a touchdown. It's called a long pass. This could be a high-scoring game. I mean, both these teams have tremendous offensive players. I know the Giant defense has improved, but you can still make plays against that Giant defense. So this could, we could see a track meet here down at MetLife with the Giants and the Bengals. As again, Eifert is, he was hurt for a lot of the season. Last year, he was one of the best tight ends in football. I know he hurt he destroyed the Redskins in that game in London a couple weeks ago. So he's a guy that's going to get one-on-one coverage because of the attention that A.J. Green gets. So he's somebody to watch in this particular game as Cincinnati is trying to tie this game. They're deep in Giant territory, second and goal now, down in around the 6 or 7 yard line. But again, you're going to see a lot of mistakes these coaches are making by chasing these points when they don't have to chase the points. So that was one thing that jumped out in the games, in a couple of the games yesterday afternoon. Again, another thing, NFL ratings, I know that had been a concern for a few. The Seattle-New England rating was the best Week 10 rating in Sunday Night Football in 5 years. You had the Pittsburgh-Dallas rating in that 425 window be their best of the season. So it seems like now we're post, as A.J. Green's called touchdown pass, as we are post-election, that these NFL ratings are going to start to, get to where they were, this is football season, November, December. I expect the ratings to climb. And if yesterday was a sign of things to come, the NFL ratings are going to climb back to where we've been accustomed to seeing them over the course of the last, 25 to 30 years. So again, no election. I know we're in sweeps month for television, November sweeps, but again, I anticipate that you're going to see these ratings start to climb up. You're going to have some good matchups. November 27th, Sunday night game has been flexed, so they're moving the Jet-New England game to 425, and they're putting Denver-Kansas City. Or the Raiders, Kansas City. I mean, it's one of those AFC West. Either Denver, Kansas City, or the Raiders, Kansas City. I believe it's the Raiders, Kansas City. Yeah, it's the Raiders in Kansas City. So they flexed that game into the November 27th slot for Sunday Night Football, which is the right move. That Denver, Kansas City would be a better game. Either one of those combinations would be a better game than the Jets and the Patriots. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. I will see you next time. Have a great evening. So long.